Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. At a little more than 1 month into the 2024-2025 school year, friendships are starting to settle. And along with students making new friends, they're also building relationships with new teachers. Strong student-educator bonds can significantly boost academic outcomes. They can also influence what happens with a child outside the classroom when the tests of life pose real challenges to social, emotional, and even physical well-being. And sometimes, the right teacher inspires a student to pursue a career path that pays it forward, to do for the next generation what was done for them. Brianna Morales, English teacher at East St. Louis School District 189 and 2023 Illinois Teacher of the Year, joined us recently to share her personal story of student-teacher inspiration. I started our conversation by asking Brianna what she's heard from teachers and college students this past school year, which she spent traveling the country as part of her Illinois Teacher of the Year sabbatical.
Yeah, so in the past year, it was on sabbatical in the state of Illinois, and I traveled over 27,000 miles to almost 100 schools, districts, and universities. So I've gotten to talk to a lot of teachers, both in-service and pre-service, and I think that one thing that stands out to me that I've heard from many educators across PK-16 is that these past few years in education really have been particularly some of the most unique and challenging of their careers. But what stands out even more, I think, is the heart and compassion that is everlasting of any educator that I've come across. So despite some of the challenges that educators across our state and also across the United States are facing every single day in education, as it's rapidly changing and with so many different odds stacked up against our students, especially right now, teachers are doing absolutely everything possible to give students a fighting chance at the life that they deserve through a quality education. And so in all of those programs that I visited, schools and districts, I've seen so many innovative programs, clubs, classes that have been created by educators who are coming up with all sorts of ways to reach and teach every single student in front of them, no matter how difficult the season of education might be. And so I think that that really stood out and really touched my heart this past year.
So Brianna, where you teach, I think, is something really important to talk about. And you teach in an alternative education school. And you were only the second teacher, I believe, who teaches in such a setting to be named Illinois Teacher of the Year. Why is it that you are so passionate about alternative education? And maybe if we even take a step back, there may be people listening who don't understand what alternative education is. So can we start with that definition and then tell me why it's important to you?
Yeah. So for anyone who's unfamiliar with alternative education, that's pretty common because alternative education is different everywhere. And so there's not really one central definition. But from the clientele that I work with, these students could have been placed in an alternative setting for many different reasons or elected themselves for a smaller environment. And so our school, I teach at the Alternative High School in East St. Louis, where some students have been placed there maybe for academic needs. They might need some extra help. Or scaffolding to support them, social emotional needs. We have programs that benefit our students in those ways, or they just might benefit from being in a smaller community with teachers who can provide more assistance to them, whereas you know, traditional larger high school environments just don't work for them. And so oftentimes alternative schools are not looked at very positively by society. These are kind of like throwaway schools where students who are not able to have their needs met other places, they kind of are shifted over that way. And so I think it's really unique, the clientele that we serve, because we have such a big opportunity to impact their life in such a beautiful way. And I'm so passionate about working in alternative ed. A fun fact is I'm actually a career educator in alternative ed. I've taught my entire career in this environment. And so I think that it takes special people, right, to work with special kids. And I value it because I think that alternative ed kind of speaks to the underdog in all of us, right? Mm-hmm. There was a time where someone doubted all of us, or where maybe we doubted ourselves, where we missed the mark and someone else gave us another chance. And I think that that's how we can look at students in these environments as having a second chance with educators who truly believe in who they might be tomorrow. And we accept them as who they are today so we can take them to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk with us, Brianna, about those social emotional needs? You know, what are your students coming to school carrying, right? Not necessarily on their person, but inside of them. What kinds of needs are we talking about?
So just for some context, East St. Louis was once described by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as the most distressed small city in America. And so one in every three or so children in East St. Louis come from a family that might make less than $15,000 per year. And so generational poverty in the city of East St. Louis is unmatched to any other urban environment in the United States. And so, you know, coupled with, you know, generational poverty in itself might not be an indicator of trauma or stress, but poverty coupled with, you know, a gun violence epidemic, which is not only plaguing East St. Louis, but is also rampant across our country. Mm-hmm. We also have, you know, issues of substance abuse, either by our students or maybe within families in the community that they are seeing. And all of those things, and just being in proximity to those things in your community, have adverse effects on your life outcomes and also health outcomes for our students. So when you are carrying all of those things every single day, it really does take an entire village to take these kids where they need to go. And I think that that's the beauty of alternative schools. We have the opportunity to create programming and spaces where kids can get what they need in ways that perhaps their former schools were not able to deliver to them.
Mm-hmm. I think all too often, Brianna, there is the habit of saying kids without really talking about who the kids are and what their stories are. And in your keynote address at various schools that you've toured over the past year, you've shared stories about your relationships with three students in particular, Demaya Brown, Brian, and Milani. Brianna, will you share their stories with us, maybe starting with Demaya?
Yeah. I love talking about Demaya because she was truly the most resilient and brilliant kid that I've ever known. And I think about her in so many ways, but I oftentimes just reflect on just the best of what she was. And the number one thing that I vividly remember about her was she was kind of like a scholar activist, for lack of a better term, because she loved spoken word poetry. That's what we do in my classroom to help our students to tell their story as young people and what it means to be them in this world. And she blossomed when she transitioned to our alternative school in the ninth grade and found her voice through poetry. She started posting her poems on social media. She came second place in our district-wide poetry slam because her words really had weight and meant so much to so many people. And we became so close as teacher and student. It's actually really funny, and I think listeners who are teachers can remember this about their own career as well. I was only 21 when I first started teaching, and so I teach older kids. So you can imagine being 21, teaching kids who are like 16, 17, 18, sometimes 19 years old in the school that I work in. And so Demaya was a little too old at the time to be what I call now my kids at school. And so she was actually the same age as my youngest sister at the time. So I would regard her as like my little sister. And I think that we had a really special relationship in that sisterhood, just two people trying to find their place in the world at the same time. And so despite maybe my life being very different from hers growing up, we were able to build trust, and I was able to help her prepare for the birth of her children and to watch her grow up to be an amazing young mother, to graduate from high school, and to be there to celebrate all those milestones. And I loved her so much, and I'll never regret telling her how much I loved her. In fact, I wish that I would have told her even more, because I'll never be able to tell her again.
Yeah.
really tragically, about a year and a half after she graduated high school in 2021, she passed away in a car accident that left behind her two sons. And so kind of like when I think about, you know, her life and also, you know, the spirit of educators and relationships being at the center of everything that we do, it's really heavy to talk about her. But I also think that it speaks to, you know, how much beauty there is in relationships with kids as educators, because we are there for the beautiful moments of joy and celebration and achievement, like the ones I just shared about her. But we are also the ones who walk, you know, through the depths of the valleys with students and their families when hard things do occur. Mm-hmm. But it's that same love that we experience that I think enables me to carry on and to continue doing things in her honor.
Another student, and we've mentioned her name already, is Milani. And Milani was, in fact, BFFs with Demaya. Tell us about Milani.
Yeah, it's so funny. I think a lot of teachers end up having students who are, you know, they grew up together and then somehow end up in your same class together. And so Milani and Demaya were childhood friends. And they were in my English classes at the alternative school together. And we became very close, just as many teachers do with their students. And Milani graduated from high school in the same class as Demaya in 2021. And she actually took a gap year after high school, which I think that we should encourage more students to do, you know, when they need more time to figure it out. And she said, I don't think I'm ready to go to college yet. I think I'm just going to work for a year. And I said, that's fine. Call me if you can. And I'll, you know, try to help you if I am able to. And so she called me a year later in the summer of 2022. And she said, hey, what are you doing? And I said, I'm working summer school. What are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm just going to come up there. I have something to tell you. And so I'm trying to figure out what she's trying to tell me and prepare myself before she comes up to school. And she's rushing me off the phone. And she says, I think I want to go to college. And I said, it's the middle of July. Kids are going to college in like 3 weeks. What do you mean? And I very quickly said to her before she left off the phone, did you do your FAFSA? And she said, no, what is that?
Yeah.
And so I said, oh my goodness. So we have a long day ahead of us. She comes mm-hmm. up to the school and she showed me an acceptance letter to Western Illinois University. And she was so excited. She said, it's just really speaking to me to go here. And so we marked down the path of figuring out what it meant to be first generation and to get into college and also to get it paid for. But more than just being first generation, we ended up finding out that she had been facing housing instability for many years and no one ever knew it. And so it was never documented on school paperwork. And we had to find a way to get her financial aid when that was never verifiable by school. And so we spent the entire afternoon going back and forth on the phone with financial aid and Western. And as teachers always do, there's a loophole for everything. And we found it. And she did. She did get her financial aid. And 3 weeks later, we moved her into Western. And it felt like the first breath of fresh air that both of us had taken in such a long time. Later that fall, she declared her major as English teacher education, and she's becoming a teacher. And it's pretty funny because she actually got to meet my seventh grade teacher who inspired me to become a teacher at the Illinois Teacher of the Year banquet. So it was a pretty full circle moment with that kid.
So what did it mean to you to hear Milani tell you that she was going to be pursuing education?
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing when any person decides to join the most noble profession on earth, which is education. And so I'm always inspired by young people who want to take on that charge because I know that we're passing the torch to kids who have so many better ideas than we do. They can carry on the love and passion that's been poured into them by their own teachers. And so that excites me. But I also, you know, there's a little bit of a pain in my heart for, you know, some students who share similar things like Milani. When she told me that she wanted to be a teacher, she shared with me, you know, I never had a teacher like you before I met you. I never knew that there were teachers like you. And I wish that every child had a relationship like Milani and I or Demaya and I do. But again, I am so inspired because I know the more kids who join the profession like Milani, every kid deserves that kind of relationship and they will have that in teachers like her. So it makes me happy to know that that's kind of what the rest of her life she has to look forward to, is pouring into kids just like her and not so much like her at all, because it's not just kids like Milani and Demaya who deserve teachers like that. It's all of our kids. We'll never be in front of one who doesn't deserve that.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to take a very quick break here, but when we come back, we'll actually have a special guest join us And that is that seventh grade teacher you mentioned, Brianna, who inspired your passion for writing and teaching when you were in junior high school. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts. Welcome back. Let's continue our conversation with Brianna Morales. She is an English teacher at East St. Louis School District 189, the founder of Sisterhood of Hope, Inc., and 2023 Illinois Teacher of the Year. Before the break, Brianna, you were talking about a couple of students. There's another student that I'd like to hear more about in just a bit. But we were talking about a teacher who made a huge impact on your life when you were in middle school. And that person is Jennifer Steinecke. And she was your seventh grade language arts teacher at Eisenhower Junior High School. Jennifer, welcome to St. Louis on the Air, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Brianna, the relationship that you had with Jennifer, which at that time you called Miss Steinecke,
And she still does, and she should.
Okay, she shouldn't?
No.
Well, tell me a little bit, Brianna, about earlier this year, because it was then that you wrote a letter to Ms. Steinecke that started with, "I don't know if you remember me, but I could never forget you." What is it that you shared in that letter, Brianna, and why did you send it to her?
Yeah. So when I was nominated for Illinois Teacher of the Year, we go through the process of applying formally. And somehow the Illinois State Board of Education narrows down a pool of finalists to, you know, a group of 12 educators across the state. And so somehow I made the cut. And they did this really funny thing, because when you're great at your job, they give you more work to do as teachers. And so they said, hey, you know, we want to have a celebration in honor of all of the finalists. And we are giving you 3 tickets to go to a reception in Bloomington, Illinois, which is 2.5 hours away from where both Jen and I live. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, I don't know anyone who cares enough about teachers or enough about me to drive 2.5 hours to this reception. And so I thought about this woman, like Jen. And so I thought to myself, you know, like, where is she? If I, you know, were to bring anyone, I wish that I could find her. And I had actually tried to look for her many times throughout my career, but I guess I didn't look hard enough, because I was writhing my brain for who I was going to bring at like 3 o'clock in the morning one night. And I typed her name in on Google, and she was the first hit on Google, still teaching seventh grade English and gifted at Eisenhower, which is where I attended all those years ago. And so when I wrote her this email, it really just stood out to me that the whole reason why I became a teacher was because Jen was so inspiring to me in the seventh grade. But even more than that, I'm here to even be able to tell that same story because Jen quite literally saved my life when I was in the seventh grade after attempting suicide when I was 12. And so when I sent this email to her, I just said, you know, I've seen and done all of these things, and I started a nonprofit. My kids are writing a book. I'm doing all of this stuff, but I just want you to know that it wouldn't have been possible if I never met you. And so I was just hoping that after 16 years, you remembered that dorky little kid in your seventh grade English class, which there's probably many of them. So I'm not that memorable. And if you do, that you would drive 2.5 hours to a ceremony with me in Bloomington. Thanks, Bree. And I just hoped that she would get the email and not promptly delete it because of how unhinged it was. But yeah, she responded. And she actually responded during my 6-hour class with my juniors. And I pulled up the email because I was like screaming while I was teaching The Great Gatsby. And these kids are like, what is going on? And I showed them the email. And I think it's so important for young people to see that as adults too, there was somebody in our life who impacted us, that made us want to be a teacher and to give back to them in the ways that we do. And so I think that that was really full circle, not just for me, but also for all of my students to see that the teacher that I am is only because of teachers who poured into me in that way.
So, Jennifer, did you remember? I mean, did it take much reading through that email that came to you to have a recollection of Brianna?
Well, thank God she sent a little, she's got a little picture at the bottom of her, and literally as soon as I saw her picture, I was like, I mean, Brianna, you have not changed a lot. You are just so
I'm aging well.
I was like, for sure, that little, you are, that little bubbly, you know, sensitive little girl that I remembered. So yeah, I remembered her right away.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, you know, as the teacher, what would you say, you know, was the seed, so to speak, of your relationship with Brianna?
I just think, you know, I remember her being a real sensitive, you know, just that all middle school kids, right, are pushing boundaries and looking for, you know, trying to figure out who they are. She was more quiet, but yet when we were one-on-one and had our little one-on-one times, she literally would let me know who she was, and she was very sensitive. I remember you being a very good writer, inquisitive, maybe struggling a little with your identity, but what middle schooler doesn't do that?
Mm-hmm.
But you were, you know, she's just a great, great overall student.
Mm-hmm.
Worked really hard, and, you know, she did a lot of good writing that year, and I guess we just formed that bond.
Yeah. And I understand, Jennifer, that time when Brianna was your student, and this was around 2006, 2007, that you were personally facing some big challenges of your own. Is that right?
Yes. It was, she was my first class the year before I had gone through chemotherapy for breast cancer, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so was there something about having a student, as you've described her, someone who was sensitive but also very expressive, that provided a way for you, not just as an educator, but as a person, as a woman, to kind of get over some of the personal things that you were dealing with?
I think, you know, just having the job and throwing myself back into it after having taken a little time off to recover physically, that class, I do remember, Brianna, your class was just full of kids that made it really easy to teach and to focus on and, you know, get the focus off of myself, you know, and give it back. And it was part of, I know it was part of my healing process,
mm-hmm.
which was great.
Yeah. So, Brianna, you, like Melanie, were inspired by a teacher, Ms. Steinecke, to pursue education. Was that something that developed over time, or was there an experience that you had that convinced you that that was the career path for you?
Yeah, it was having Jen as my teacher.
Yeah.
So I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher, but Jen was my seventh grade English teacher. And so I think some of the most like pivotal moments of my educational career and also in our relationship as teacher and student were when I was transitioning back to school after being in psychiatric rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually in Jen's class that I learned about writing poetry as a way to kind of cope with challenges that were going on in my life. And as a middle schooler, every 12-year-old kid has many challenges. But aside from just being a typical middle schooler, there were so many big and hard things going so fast in my life at the time that led to the emotional challenges that I was experiencing. And Jen Jen empowered me to just write about it, to be able to cope and to heal from it. And so that was so inspiring to me, also as someone who was facing so many battles of her own, to just give so much of herself to a kid like me when it was just so much easier to just show up, do your job, and go home. And she did so much more than that. And so expressive writing is now what I do with my own high school students in East St. Louis, and they get to tell their story of what it means to be them in the world through spoken word poetry in my 11th and 12th grade classes, just like Jen taught me how to do.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the third student whom you talk about when you have been traveling around the country to speak with other teachers, and that's Brian. Tell us, Brianna, about how writing has been part of the kind of relationship or the bond that you have formed with him and what he is doing now.
Yeah, so I think that half of the battle of being an English teacher is convincing kids that they have a story to tell, because so many students have been made to feel, especially in the environment that I teach in alternative ed, that that they don't have a story to tell or that their story isn't important. And so I was this student's teacher for 2 years back to back as a junior and a senior. And for the whole entire first year that I was his teacher, that was what he told me every single day, was like, I don't have any stories to tell, and you're definitely not going to get one out of me. But the tide kind of started to change when he was a senior in high school, and he acquiesced to the idea that maybe I do. And he was the first kid, which is funny. It's always these kids who tell you they don't have any story to tell. He was always the first kid to knock on my door every 9 a.m. planning period and just say, hey, like, I really have something to tell you. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I have papers to grade and parents to call and things to do. Like, what could you possibly have to tell me after you say you don't have any stories? And every day when he would come in, we would have these little one-on-one conversations similar to the ones that Jen described her and I having. And it was there that I really did get to know, like, his vision for his life, all of the stories that he kept really close to his heart that he would never tell anyone out loud. And I learned that he did write, and he wrote a lot, and he had beautiful stories inside of the journal that he kept that no one ever saw. And so we kind of went from there of developing what those stories are and how we can share those with the world. And so he graduated in the original class of 2020. And for some students like Demaya or Milani and I kind of thought, you know, we'll stay connected for a long time after graduation, but I wasn't sure that this student and I would. And that's okay, right? For all of our students, we're just so lucky to be part of their journey. Or so I thought, because graduation came and went. So proud to see him achieve that milestone in his life. And then I didn't really hear from him for 2 years. So kind of fast forward to 2022. I hadn't really heard from him, kind of caught up with him through various friends and just made sure that he was doing okay. But I randomly got a phone call when I was in New York City, actually, doing what teachers do every summer. I was not on vacation. I was doing professional development. And so I'm in New York City, and I wasn't really thinking about kids much at all. So when this phone number called me, I just didn't really know what connections I had to it at the time. But I shared that I'm on the school board for the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice. I teach many justice-impacted youth, and I have many justice-impacted people in my family, so it could have been anyone calling me from this number at that time. So I curiously answered it, and it was an 866 number, which, for people who don't know, 866 is the collect call number for the Illinois Department of Corrections. And so when I answered the phone call, it was his voice on the other end. And to this day, I don't know how he got my phone number because I never gave it to him. But when he connected the call, he was just as excited as I'll get out to hear from me. And I just said, hey, you know, how's it going? And I asked him, you know, why did you call me? And he very matter-of-factly said, before very matter-of-factly changing the subject, I called you because I knew that you would always answer. And so, you know, we've stayed connected through this time that he's been away. And when he learned that I was Teacher of the Year, I shared and got his permission to share him and some of my other students' stories. And I always tell him about, you know, how moved and touched and inspired people are. And a lot of people had asked, like, you know, is this kid still writing? Are any of these kids still writing? And when I brought it up to him, he let me know that he is has recently started a writing group in the prison where he's incarcerated at to help other young people to make sense of their lived experiences through poetry, the same way that we did in my classroom and the same way that Jen did with some kid who didn't really know what the meaning was behind any of that stuff all those years ago.
So I have a question for both Brianna, you, and Jennifer, for you. The first part of this conversation, Brianna, you had described a couple of students who, whose stories could be considered success. And sometimes there is a premium that is put on the stories of students who go to college, who complete, who go on to, in this case, we're talking about teaching and the sort of legacy, right, that is left by teachers who've made a really big impact on a student's life. But with Brian's story, what about it makes it a success in a way that maybe other people might not see? And I'd like to turn the question first to you, Jennifer, particularly as someone who has been an educator for such a long time. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that I am so happy that he is still writing. And I just think that the power of writing allows, you know, voices to be heard that might not otherwise be heard in this day of social and emotional learning, the emphasis being put on social and emotional learning. I think that quite often, you know, we do a lot where we practice mindfulness, and writing certainly helps mindfulness, you know, develop that whole mindfulness. And I think that in this day and age, when kids feel like they have to rise to the occasion, they have to go to college, they have to do this, you know, just like Brianna said, just trying to teach kids that, you know, their whole self-worth doesn't come down to that they got A's or B's. At the end of the day, it's how joyful and fulfilling their lives can be, and by expressing it through the written word, that is, you know, can't ask for any more than that.
Brianna, how about for you, especially given, you know, you're teaching in an alternative high school, and there's so much pressure when it comes to getting kids done, that there are educational priorities that take precedence over addressing students not just as pupils, but as whole beings. How is it that that Brian's story is a story of success?
Yeah, so I think Brian Stevenson once said that each of us is worth more than the worst thing that we've ever done. And I think that the best educators instill that in all of our students. And so Brian, being a student who may have missed the mark in some way or had challenges along the way that led to, you know, his current situation, I think that the success there is that he recognizes that and that he has the skills that he needed to be able to cope with it and to be able to make different decisions in the future. The joy of teaching outside of these amazing relationships that we build with students is the hope that the knowledge and the skills that we give them today help them to live a better life tomorrow, maybe even when we're not there, right there with them. And that is the success of Brian's story, is that, you know, Brian grew up. Brian doesn't live here anymore. Brian is away for the time being. But the skills and the knowledge that we gave him and how we surrounded him with love, he remembered that. And he's able to access that on a daily basis because it was so powerful. And so I think that every student's outcomes in life are going to be different. And so success for all of our students might look different, but acknowledging all the wins, whether big or small, helps them to remember that they matter no matter what their life turned out like. And Brian has shared that with me also. And getting some feedback about his story, people are so moved and inspired by him and his resilience. And he shared with me once, thank you so much for remembering all the good things about me, because sometimes it feels like everyone forgot. And teachers, when we allow students to be who they are, we accept them as they are because we have faith in who they might become one day. That's when kids can truly thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As we're sitting here together tomorrow, there is something very special happening. And it's not happening here in St. Louis or in East St. Louis. It's not happening in the Chicago suburbs where you are, Jennifer. It's happening at the nation's capital. Brianna, tell me about that. And Jennifer, I mean, how does it feel in this last year of your teaching career, your full-time teaching career, to be going to D.C. together?
Well, I was just so honored that she would think of me and ask me to accompany her. I'm extremely excited about it. And I am just, you know, it's that, what would we say, the cherry on the tip of my little end of my career cupcake there. So I'm very excited about it.
And what is the it that's happening, Brianna?
Yeah, so tomorrow on Saturday, all of the 2024 National Teacher of the Year cohort, so 55 teachers of the year from all the U.S. states and territories, were invited to the first ever back-to-school event put on by the President and First Lady of the United States at the White House. And so we were given the ability to bring some colleagues and students if we wish. And of course, the first person that I thought of was Jen. And so she will be there to accompany me in Washington, D.C., but also so will Milani. And so I think that that is truly one of the most wholesome full circle moments that I've experienced over the past year, because Jen and Milani actually got to meet at the Teacher of the Year banquet, the one that I wrote Jen that email about, because Milani actually wrote one of my recommendation letters for Teacher of the Year. So they got to meet then, and this is how we're ending our year. So I think that it's beautiful, especially that Jen will be retiring this year and Milani will be entering education soon.
Well, I hope that you have a wonderful time all together. And thank you so much for spending time coming here to talk with us. Brianna Morales is English teacher at East St. Louis School, District 189, and 2023 Illinois Teacher of the Year. And Jennifer Steinecke was Brianna's seventh grade language arts teacher at Eisenhower Junior High. Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Brianna, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.